Good evening. This is Reading the Classics, and I'm Kelly Johnson of the Ketchikan Public Library. First, The Pied Piper of Hamelin by Robert Browning. Hamelin's Town in Brunswick by famous Hanover City. The river Weser, deep and wide, washes its wall on the southern side. A pleasanter spot you never spied. But when begins my ditty, almost 500 years ago, to see the townsfolk suffer so from vermin was a pity. Rats! They fought the dogs and killed the cats and bit the babes in the cradles and ate the cheeses out of the vats and licked the soup from the cook's own ladles. Slid open the kegs of salted sprats, made nests inside men's Sunday hats, and even spoiled the women's chats by drowning their speaking with shrieking and squeaking in 50 different sharps and flats. At last the people in a body to the town hall came flocking. "'Tis clear," cried they, "our mayor's a naughty, and as for our corporation, shocking! To think we buy gowns lined with ermine for dolts that can't or won't determine what's best to rid us of our vermin. You hope, because you're old and obese, to find in the furry civic robe ease? Rouse up, sir, give your brains a racking to find the remedy we're lacking, or sure as fate we'll send you packing." At this the mayor and corporation quaked with mighty consternation. An hour they sat in council. At length the mayor broke the silence. "For a guilder I'd my ermine gown sell. I wish I were a mile hence. It's easy to bid one rack one's brain. I'm sure my poor head aches again. I've scratched it so, and all in vain. Oh, for a trap, a trap, a trap!" Just as he said this, what should hap at the chamber door but a gentle tap? "Bless us," cried the mayor, "what's that?" With the corporation as he sat, looking though wondrous fat, nor brighter was his eye, nor moister than a too-longed open oyster, save when at noon his paunch grew mutinous for a plate of turtle green and glutinous. Only a shaping of shoes on the mat, anything like the sound of a rat, make my heart go pit-a-pat. "Come in," the mayor cried, looking bigger, and in did come the strangest figure. His queer long coat from heel to head was half of yellow and half of red, and he himself was tall and thin, with sharp blue eyes, each like a pin, a light loose hair yet swarthy skin, and no tuft on cheek nor beard on chin, but lips were smile when in and out, there was no guessing his kith and kin, and nobody could enough admire the tall man and his quaint attire. Quoth one, "It's as my great-grandsire, starting up at the trump doom's tone, had walked away from his painted tombstone." He advanced to the council table, "And please your honor," say he, "I'm able, by means of a secret charm, to draw all creatures living beneath the sun that creep or swim or fly or run after me so as you never saw, and I chiefly use my charm on creatures that do people harm, the mole and toad and newt and viper, and people call me the Pied Piper." And here they noticed round his neck a scarf of red and yellow stripe to match with his coat of the selfsame check. And at the scarf's end hung a pipe, and his fingers, they noticed, were ever straying, as if impatient to be playing upon his pipe as it low dangled over his vesture so old-fangled. "Yet," said he, "poor piper as I am, in Tartary I feed the cham. Last June from his huge swarm of gnats I eased in Asia the nizam of a monstrous brood of vampire bats. And as for your brain bewilders, if I can rid your town of rats, will you give me 1,000 guilders?" 50,000 was the exclamation of the astonished mayor and corporation. Into the street the piper stepped, smiling first a little smile, as if he knew what magic slept in his quiet pipe the while. Then, like a musical adept, To blow the pipe, his lips he wrinkled, and green and blue his sharp eyes twinkled, like a candle flame where salt is sprinkled. And ere three shrill notes the pipe uttered, you heard as if an army mutter. And the muttering grew to a grumbling, and the grumbling to a mighty rumbling, and out of the houses the rats came tumbling. Great rats, small rats, lean rats, brawny rats, brown rats, black rats, gray rats, tawny rats, grave old plodders, grave young friskers, fathers, mothers, uncles, cousins, cocking tails and pricking whiskers, family by tens and dozens, brothers, sisters, husbands, wives, followed the piper for their lives. From street to street he piped advancing, and step for step they followed dancing, until they came to the river Weser, wherein all plunged and perished, save one, who, stout as Julius Caesar, swam across and lived to carry, as he the manuscript he cherished, to Ratland home his commentary. Which was, at the first shrill notes of the pipe, I heard a sound of a scraping tripe, and putting apples wondrous ripe into a cider press's gripe, and moving away of pickle tub boards, a leaving jar of conserve cupboards, a drawing the corks of train oil flasks, and breaking of the hoops of butter casks. And it seemed as if a voice, sweeter far than by harp or psaltery, is breathed called out, O rats, rejoice! The world is grown to one vast dry psaltery, so munch on, crunch on, take your nuncheon, breakfast, supper, dinner, luncheon. And just as a bulky sugar puncheon, already staved like a great sun shone, glory is scarce an inch before me, just as methought it said, come bore me, I found the Weser rolling o'er me. You should have heard the Hamelin people ringing the bells till they rocked the steeple. Go, cried the mayor, and get the long poles. Poke up the nests and block up the holes. Consult with the carpenters and the builders, and leave in our town not a trace of the rats, when suddenly up the face of the piper perked in the marketplace, with a, first, if you please, my 1,000 guilders. 1,000 guilders, the mayor looked blue, so did the corporation too, for council dinners made rare havoc with claret, moselle, vinaigrette, and hock, and half the money would replenish their cellar's biggest butt with rhenish, to pay the sum to a wandering fellow with a gypsy coat of red and yellow. Beside, quoth the mayor with a knowing wink, our business was done at the river's brink. We saw with our eyes the vermin sink, and what's dead can't come to life, I think. So, friend, we're not the folks to shrink from duty from giving you something to drink, and a matter of money to put in your poke. But as for the guilders, what we spoke of them, as you know, was very well in joke. Besides, our losses have made us thrifty. 1,000 guilders, come, take 50. The piper's face fell, and he cried, no trifling, I can't wait. Beside, I promised to visit by dinner time Baghdad and accept the prime of the head cook's pottage, all he's rich in, for having left in the cow's kitchen of a nest of scorpions no survivor. With him I prove no bargain driver. With you don't think I'll bait a stiver, and folks who put me in a passion may find me pipe after another fashion. How, cried the mayor, do you think I brook being worse treated than a cook, insulted by a lazy ribald, with idle pipe and vesture piebald? You threaten us, fellow. Do your worst. Blow your pipe there till you burst. Once more he stepped into the street, and his lips again laid his long pipe of smooth cane straight, ere he blew three notes. such sweet, soft notes as yet a musician's cunning never gave the enraptured air. There was a rustling that seemed like a bustling of merry crowds jostling at pitcher and hustling. Small feet were pattering, wooden shoes clattering, little hands clapping and tongues clattering. And like fowls in a farmyard when barley is scattering, out came the children running. All the little boys and girls with rosy cheeks and flaxen curls and sparkling eyes and teeth like pearls, tripping and skipping, ran merrily after. The wonderful music was shouting and laughter. The mayor was dumb, and the council stood as if they were changed into blocks of wood, unable to move a step or cry to the children merrily skipping by, could only follow with the eye that joyous crowd at the piper's back. But how the mayor was on the rack, and the wretched council bosoms beat as the piper turned from High Street to where the Wester rolled its waters, right in the way of their sons and daughters. However, he turned from south to west, and to Copper Hill he steps addressed, and after him the children pressed. There was great joy in every breast. He can never cross that mighty top. He's forced to let the piping drop, and we shall see our children stop. When lo, as they reach the mountainside, a wondrous portal opened wide, as if a cavern was suddenly hollowed, and the piper advanced, and the children followed. And when they were to the very last, the door in the mountainside shut fast. Did I say all? No, one was lame and could not dance the whole of the way. And in after years, if you would blame his sadness, he was used to say, "It's dull in our town since my playmates left. I can't forget that I'm bereft of all the pleasant sights they see, for which the piper also promised me. For he led us, he said, to a joyous land, joining the town and just at hand, where waters gushed and fruit trees grew, and flowers put forth a fairer hue, and everything was strange and new. The sparrows were brighter than peacocks here, and their dogs outrun our fallow deer, and honeybees had lost their sting, and horses were born with eagles' wings. And just as I became assured my lame foot would be speedily cured, the music stopped, and I stood still, and I found myself outside the hill, left alone against my will, to go now limping as before, and never hear of that country more." Alas, alas for Hamlin! There came to many a burgher's pate a text which says that heaven's gate opens to the rich as easy rate as the needle's eye takes the camel in. The mayor sent east, west, north, and south to offer the piper by word of mouth whatever it was men's lot to find him, silver and gold to his heart content, if only he'd return the way he went and bring the children behind him. But when they saw 'twas a lost endeavor, and piper and dancers were gone forever, they made a decree that lawyers never should think their records dated duly if after the day of the month and year these words did not as well appear. As long as after what happened here on the 22nd of July, 1376, and the better in memory to fix, the place of the children's last retreat, they called it the Pied Piper Street. Was there any one playing on pipe or tabor was for sure in the future to lose his labor, nor suffered they hostelry or tavern to shock with mirth a street so solemn. But opposite the place of the cavern, they wrote the story on a column, and on the great church window painted the same to make the world acquainted with how their children were stolen away, and there it stands to this very day. And I must not omit to say that in Transylvania there's a tribe of alien people that subscribe the outlandish ways and dress on which their neighbors lay such stress to their fathers and mothers having risen out of some subterranean prison into which they were trepanned long time ago in a mighty band out of Hamlet Town in Brunswick Land, but how or why they don't understand. So, Willie, lend me you your wipers, of scores out with all men, especially pipers. And whether they pipe us free from rats or mice, if we've promised them aught, let's keep our promise. And now, from the Sock Stories by Aunt Fanny's Daughter, The Fairy's Wish. Once upon a time, there lived a little old man and his little old wife in a little old house that ran on wheels. The reason why the little old house ran on wheels was that the little old man used to keep a monkey show in it and drove it about for a caravan with an old white horse that had a blind eye to draw it. But now the monkeys were all dead and buried, and the old man and the woman lived alone and had a bright green blinds, bright red sides, a bright blue door, and bright yellow steps. On the bright blue door there was a bright brass knocker, which was polished up at such a rate you could see your face in it, looking as long as anything. And underneath that was a bright brass door plate with the old showman's name, Timmy Timmons, on it, which was so polished up until you could see your face in it, looking as broad as anything. Now, Mr. Timmy Timmons and his wife, being mighty simple old people, were fond of reading fairy stories and believed entirely in every word of them. They hadn't the smallest doubt that sprites and fairies were as common as peas this very minute, and would have thought it quite a matter of course if a wonderful gift had suddenly tumbled down the stovepipe, or a beautiful lady came bursting through the wall and offered to carry them off in fairyland in a mother-of-pearl chariot drawn by milk-white doves. If a cat looked hard at her and mewed piteously, the old woman would sigh, "Well, this is fairy work. I bet a crooked sixpence she looks like an enchanted princess, poor thing. Don't she, Timmy dear?" If a donkey brayed louder than usual and seemed more obstinate than ever before, the little old man would exclaim, "There, I told you so, an unfortunate young man of surpassing beauty, enchanted in this dreadful shape by a wicked fairy. That's plain to be seen. No wonder he utters such cries of distress." And then they both groaned together and waggled their heads and blew their noses so exactly in time with yellow sick pocket handkerchiefs that the people thought two fishermen must be blowing their horns at once. One fine morning, the little old man and woman went out to take a walk on the common. "Dear me, Timmy," said the old woman, "what a good thing it would be for now if we could only find a fairy who would move our house from us somewhere nearer the village, now that poor old Dobbin is dead, killed, I've no doubt, by a wicked enchanter. We can no longer get around from place to place with you without stirring a step from the house, and we are so far away that we can't walk over to take tea with any of our neighbors. Do let us keep a sharp lookout as we walk along and see if we can't find a fairy ring or a fairy flower." "With all my heart," said Tim. And so they tottered along, peering hard into the bushes and hurrying to examine every little patch of grass that looked greener and brighter than the rest, in the hope that it was a fairy ring. All at once the little old man stopped short and pointed with his stick at a beautiful spray of foxglove. "There!" cried Mr. Timmons. "Where?" cried Mrs. Timmons. "Right before your eyes," said the little old man. "Don't you see it? A fairy foxglove is. My name is Timmy Timmons." "My goodness gracious stars, and what's his name?" cried the little old woman. "So there is, as sure as my name is Polly Timmons." So the little old man and the little old woman hurried up to the flower, and after trying a great many times to stoop down, making their old joints crack like so many torpedoes, Mrs. Polly succeeded in plucking it, and off they went pell-mell, hurry-scurry, to the little old house that ran on wheels to consult their fairy storybooks and see what was the right thing to be done in such a case. Down sat the little old man in his rocking chair with the patchwork cover, and down sat the little old woman in her rocking chair with the patchwork cover, and after long consultation of the sorrow of Prince Popinjay and the wonderful history of Princess Lily Bolero and the fairy Elimineo, they discovered that the proper way to do was to hold the fairy foxglove in your hand exactly as the clock struck 12 noon and say, "Roram, coram, torum, snorum, hiacum, tickle me, cockalorum," 7 times, then shut your eyes tight, stand on one leg, turn around 3 times, and presto, you would find when you open your eyes that your wish was accomplished. "Dear me," cried Miss Polly Timmins when her husband had finished reading this wonderful charm. "How lucky it is that we should be the ones to find the fairy foxglove, just as we are wishing too for something of the sort. Let me see, it's 11:30 now. I declare, my dear Timmy, I'll go to the garden and gather tomatoes and potatoes for dinner, for it would be a shame to leave our vegetables behind. Then, as the clock strikes 12, we'll try the fairy spell, wish that our house was in the village, and see what comes of it." So the little old woman, taking a small basket off a nail and a sharp knife in her hand, went to the garden to gather the vegetables. While she was engaged, the little man was sitting inside with a book open, for fear he should forget the charm, and the fairy foxglove tight in the other, waiting impatiently for her return. The hands of the clock kept getting nearer and nearer to 12, and at last there was only one moment waiting to the time. "Why, goodness gracious me," cried Mr. Timmy Tinnemans, "has Polly forgot all about the fairy wish? I declare I have a great mind to begin alone." Just as he said these words, the clock began to strike, and at the same moment a tremendous hullabaloo rose on the road. "There come the fairies," squeaked the little old man, and without waiting another second, he stood straight up in the middle of the floor and said in a trembling voice, "Rorum, corum, torum, snorum, hicum, tickle me, cockalorum," 7 times over. Then, shutting up his eyes as tight as possible, stood on one leg and cried, "Please, good fairy, Polly and I wish our house was in the middle of the village." Hardly has he said these words than a long red object that looked wonderfully like a cow's tail suddenly whisked in at the half-open door. The wind caught the door and shut it, slam, bang, and with a jerk that made the bright brass knocker give a tremendous double click on the bright blue door and sent the bright tin saucepan scattering in every direction, the house started suddenly down the road on double-quick trot. It happened that a large drove of cows and oxen were going down to the market that day, and being very hot and tired and thirsty, they naturally objected to being driven in that way any longer and commenced cutting a variety of capers that were enough to frighten you out of your wits. At last, one little bull who had been riding on the other one's back, charging at all the innocent ducks, geese, and pigs he could find on the road, and finally had tossed one of the men who were driving him right up into the air, dashed on ahead, and seeing the little house with the bright red sides, took the color as a personal insult to himself. Down went his head, up went his heels, and in another minute he would have bounced right into poor Mr. Timmy Timmins' dwelling, when one of the drivers saw him, and rushing up, gave him a good whack with his whip. Master Bull turned round to see what was to pay, and in an instant his tail was caught in the door, as I told you, and, frightened half out of his wits, he galloped off, dragging the little house on wheels after him, and roaring with pain, while the drivers looked on, roaring with laughter. Meanwhile, the little old man remained standing on one leg, not daring to open his eyes for fear the charm would be broken, and only wishing that the little old woman were here with him. At last, the house stopped moving, and with another jerk that sent the little old man toppling back in his rocking chair, and a moment afterwards the door was open a little bit, and a strange voice said, "Well, here we are at the village, old gentleman, begging your pardon," and then all was silent. Up jumped the little old man, opening his eyes very wide this time, hobbled to the door, and looked out. Sure enough, he was in the pleasant, shady village street, with the church directly opposite, so nice for Sundays, and nothing to be seen but a drove of cows and oxen going down the road at some distance. "Well, was there anything known like this?" cried Mr. Timmy Timmins. "If this isn't the most wonderful fairy doings I have ever heard of. I must go right off and tell Polly and tell her the happy news." So saying, he went down the bright yellow steps, carefully shut the bright blue door behind him, and toddled off as fast as he could to the common. Now the little old woman, before she finished digging up the potatoes, found the sun very warm, and herself very sleepy, and thinking her husband would be sure to call her when 12 o'clock came, she just got under the shade of the tomatoes and went off in a nice nap. When she woke up, she jumped up in a hurry, exclaiming, "Why, bless me, how could I have forgotten about 12 o'clock? I must make haste to the house this minute." But where was the house? The little old woman stared all around her until she nearly stared her eyes out, but it was nowhere to be seen. "Why, my goodness gracious, stars, and what's his name?" squealed the little old woman, letting fall her knife and basket. "Where has the house run to? Timmy must have tried the fairy charm without ever telling me. I mean to go right to the village and see if he is there." So she gathered up her basket and knife, stuffed the basket and her apron and her pockets with all the vegetables she could carry, and started off for the village. Before she was halfway there, however, she met her husband. "Where is it?" "There it is," they called at the same moment, and falling into each other's arms at a mud puddle, they stood for a long time, saying by turns, "Did you ever?" "No, I never." "Would you believe it?" "Not unless I seed it." And then they took hold of hands and trotted off to a little house that ran on wheels. There they found it, all high and dry, under a big apple tree, looking as nice as ninepence. With joyful hearts, they hurried inside, picked up the saucepans, and cooked all the tomatoes and potatoes for dinner, with an apple dumpling for dessert, made of some of the apples that had fallen off the tree. And after that, the little old man and the little old woman and the bright green blinds and the bright red walls and the bright blue door with the bright brass knocker and the bright yellow steps all lived in peace in the middle of the village, believing more firmly than ever in the existence of fairies and never doubting that their house had been moved solely by the miraculous power of the fairy spell. Rorum, corum, torum, snorum, hicum, tickle me, cockalorum. And if they're not dead, they live there still. Don't you believe it? Well, I never did. Thank you for listening to Reading the Classics on KRBB Ketchikan. Hope you have a lovely evening. Good night.